It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant and Jerry, and this is Stuff You Should Know.
The pre-Halloween spooktacular week of dark content. Although this isn't super dark.
No.
This isn't, you know, about attractions, haunted attractions.
Right.
That dark. Although, they don't want to spoil it, but there is some darkness now.
Is it dark or not?
It's dark.
Okay.
But not all of them. Just the really creepy ones.
So it's mid-level dark.
What a train wreck this is.
Yep. So for those of you who tuned in thinking that we're talking about haunted houses, sorry to let you down. Real haunted houses?
Yeah.
Of which there may or may not be a thing.
All the skeptics were like, oh, shoot.
I wanted to yell at you so bad.
This is just about attractions.
Yeah, these things are proven to exist.
They are real.
Because you can probably, if you live near any kind of major metropolitan area, you can probably find one somewhere in your town.
I think you can find them almost anywhere. If you live in a major metropolitan area, that may be one of those really big daddy ones.
Right.
But chances are your small town has some form of haunted attraction, even if it's the local, if it's for charity and they're trying to raise money for the local JCs, and it's set up in like a school gymnasium.
Or there's enthusiasts known as home haunters.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will, they basically set up a haunted house in their backyard.
Yeah, there's some documentary about two guys that are, I don't know if they do haunted houses or just take their Halloween, decorating to extremes.
Well, I think that's one and the same for a home haunter.
Yeah, I think they're competing guys though in the same street.
Yeah.
Someone did a documentary on because they just keep like ramping it up and ramping it up. And
right.
Have become obsessed with outdoing one another.
Right.
But I don't know what it's called, so it just came to me right now.
Me either.
Yeah.
But you do make a good point. Haunted houses are everywhere. Apparently in 2014, they being the American Retail Federation, who likes to put out statistics and figures about holidays, they expect 33 million people to go into haunted houses across the United States.
Yeah, about 4,000 of them, 1,200 of which are the pay some money to go in professionally. About 300 are in theme parks, like, you know, like amusement parks.
Right.
And then about 3,000 of them are the charity ones that I spoke of.
Right, which you'll still pay, but they're not going to the Fat Cat Koch Brothers or whatever. The profits aren't. They're going to, you know, your local community organization.
Yeah, and those are fun. You know, you might get some light scares. It's not like these, the really super scary ones.
Oh, yeah.
Where you pay good money to, you know, to leave your body and wet your pants.
Just one more little bit of data, statistics, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Some numbers. Talk about role reversal. Remember, you used to be stat guy.
I know. I got so bored of it.
In 2014, again, the National Retail Federation expects Americans to spend $87 per person on Halloween for a total of $7.4 billion.
Yeah, that's right behind Christmas.
Right behind Christmas.
People love getting their scare on.
They really do.
I don't decorate at all anymore at the house just because I think I've talked about this before. We don't have trick-or-treaters mm-hmm. on my area of the street.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems kind of pointless.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, what is the point at that point?
Yeah.
There is no point.
Emily thinks we could do it just for people that drive by during the month of October, like, you know, to see the house. But I don't know, man. Whatever you put up, you got to take down.
That, and plus it's like you get no satisfaction from somebody driving by. It's not like they honk at your decorations.
None.
With little kids coming up and trick-or-treating, there's some sort of payoff, I guess, to your effort, right?
That's right. Scarring them for life.
All right. So let's talk the history of this, because it turns out that haunted house attractions are relatively new, but they're probably not as new as trick-or-treating in the United States. Did you know that?
Not as new. So they predate trick-or-treating?
By a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when we look at first when I read some of this history, the ancient history, I was like, come on.
This is from Fangoria magazine, by the way.
Oh, it was?
Mm-hmm.
But then when I started really getting into it, I was like, you know what? It actually did pave the way for what we see today.
Yeah.
In like ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
To keep people from grave robbing, basically, they would, make little scary things like trap doors and snakes and creepy insects and things to keep people away from robbing their ancestors' graves.
Right. They'd put an old lady in a rocking chair who would go, "Behold the ravages of age."
What's that from?
The Simpsons.
Oh, okay. Greeks and Romans kind of paved the way as well. They had mazes and labyrinths set up with monsters and things.
Even more than that, even more directly, they started stage effects.
Yeah.
Like fake blood and
fog.
Things like that. Yeah. And that's where a lot of this stuff finds its roots, is in early stage special effects.
Yeah, it still is theater when you come down to it. It's just like an interactive participatory theater.
Right.
That you walk through.
And then the Dark Ages, the medieval ages. I think the medieval ages are part of the Dark Ages, but they're not one and the same. But during the Dark Ages,
yeah,
the introduction of, well, the syncretism between Christianity and paganism that led to the adoption of Halloween, kind of saw a rise to this, basically a scare show.
Yeah, these little plays that would scare people into remaining pious and remaining on the narrow path.
Right, which is still very big today.
Yeah, it
has
really
made
is.
A huge comeback.
Uh-huh.
But these scare shows, if you want to call them that, I'm pretty sure that's not what they called them during the Dark Ages, but they featured plenty of gore and fake blood and violence, and so the people who went to see them weren't necessarily going for the religious message.
Right.
They were going to, you know, be grossed out.
Right. And get a kick.
Yeah.
During the Renaissance, Shakespeare was famous for incorporating, like, demons and ghosts and monsters in his plays.
He loved those.
And in the 1800s, we've talked about this before, there was a big rise in spiritualists and conjuring sessions and mediums and fortune telling, and communicating with the dead was, like, a really popular thing during the Victorian era.
So it was debunking it.
Yeah, that's true.
The Victorian era also gave us the Wax Museum.
Yeah.
Which very quickly went from celebrities to include scary stuff, too. So you could walk through a wax museum, and while the stuff didn't move or jump out at you, you would come across, like, some sort of tableau of, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Right.
And, like, kind of a room, and it was scary and lit oddly, and you were meant to, the intention was to scare you.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't, again, there wasn't an overt scare or startle.
Right.
It was something that definitely laid the groundwork for haunted houses to come.
They were to instill dread in the hearts of all.
Right.
John Pepper invented something pretty neat in the 1800s. It was sort of setup where you use mirrors to appear translucent. If you've ever been to Disney's Haunted Mansion, I think Pepper's Ghost is what they call it.
Is that right?
A trick they use to, you know, it's like a hologram sort of.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, but using mirrors.
Right.
It's not like the Tupac hologram.
No.
It wouldn't be high tech like that.
No, but it still looks pretty awesome.
That's right.
The 20th century then, Chuck, is where we really find the progenitors of the modern haunted house, the dark rides. And there's this really neat article on Collectors Weekly. You ever read any of their stuff?
No.
They write a lot of really cool long-form articles about like stuff that's come and gone, like old fads and things. And one of them was it's called Jeepers Creepers, Why Dark Rides Scare the Pants Off of Us.
Nice.
But it's a Collectors Weekly article. It's an interview with a guy who collects old dark ride stuff. But dark rides were like if you went to some rinky-dink amusement park or whatever.
Yeah.
They couldn't afford to have a roller coaster, but they could afford a little dark building with the walls painted black inside and a little train track or maybe a little boat or something that rode you through, and all of a sudden a skeleton popped out of the wall or, you know, a strobe light went off or something like that. And these were the direct progenitors of the haunted house.
Yeah, and between that and the traveling freak shows, it really, like you said, everything was in place. And couple that with the fact that a lot of these houses from the 1800s were starting to crumble, and there was, you know, nary a neighborhood that didn't have some creepy old vacant house.
Yeah.
And to keep their kids out, you know, people would say, parents would say, you know, that place, you don't want to go in there.
Right, it's haunted.
Because you may not come out.
That was an interesting point that I definitely wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
But if you think of the modern conception of when you think of a haunted house, what comes to mind typically is a dilapidated old Victorian mansion.
With a story around it.
Yeah.
You know, it's never just like, oh yeah, that was where Mr. Johnson lived. He was a farmer and kind of a good guy.
Yeah. Died quietly in his sleep. No reports of his ghost at all.
Well, what's probably funny is that was the real story. But what you heard was that he killed his family and had their name written on each knife blade.
Mm-hmm. That's what I heard.
The first official recorded haunted attraction, according to this person who wrote this article in Fangoria.
Becca McKendry.
He says that, the Orton and Spooner Ghost House in the UK, in the Edwardian Fair in 1915 was the first, genuine haunted attraction.
Yep. That was the first ghost house.
And in France, they had something called the Grand, Guignol.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of similar, I think, and around the same time.
So you've got that haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the dark houses that are coming up in places like Coney Island and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then finally, you have the first big-time permanent haunted house, as we understand today, which you've already mentioned, the Haunted Mansion, that was first built in 1969 at Disneyland.
Yeah.
And apparently it was supposed to go up at Disneyland, the one in California.
Yeah.
And the one in Disney World, that came up in the 70s, right? Late 70s, early 80s?
I'm not sure, actually. I've been to that one, though.
If you want to know more about that stuff, though, I think Stuff You Missed in History Class did like a whole episode on the Haunted Mansion ride.
Oh, Holly from Stuff You Missed in History Class is an absolute Haunted Mansion fanatic.
Right. So I think they have a whole episode on
it. She knows more about it than anyone. More than Walt Disney himself knew, I think.
But here's a little known fact, besides what you just said.
Yeah, about Holly.
That she knows more about it than Walt Disney.
Uh-huh.
Originally, the Haunted Mansion ride was a walk-through ride.
Yeah.
Like today's haunted houses. But instead, they found that the ushers couldn't get people on a pace easily enough.
Yeah.
And so there'd be traffic jams and backups and everything. So they said, we'll turn it into a dark ride. And that's what they did.
Yeah, which we'll get to this later, but that's a big part of running your own haunted house is the flow.
Throughput.
Yeah. Also, the haunted house and the Haunted Mansion in Disney was based on the Winchester Mystery House as far as the look.
Yeah.
They didn't want to have some cruddy old dilapidated psycho house in the middle of their lovely park. So they says, well, we can make it creepy on the inside, and let's just make it like a really lovely Victorian on the outside.
Yeah.
And if you haven't listened to that podcast on the Winchester Mystery House, I recommend it. It's pretty neat.
This one of ours.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, that was a good one.
Not the Disney podcast.
Right. So then you mentioned the JCs, Chuck, and I didn't realize this, but the idea of a semi-permanent, so not located in like an amusement park or something like that.
Yeah.
But an annual attraction that just comes up around Halloween and then comes down in November.
November 1st.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as haunted houses go in the United States, was created by the JCs, which is the United States Junior Chamber, which is like a community organization with chapters across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 70s, the JCs hit upon this idea of, well, why don't you guys create haunted houses in your town as fundraisers? And it just took off like a rocket. And the JCs became synonymous in the 70s and 80s and up to the 90s with haunted houses. Like, if you went to a haunted house in your town, it was probably put on by the local chapter of the JCs.
Yeah, I remember specifically going to some of those as a kid, as well as my church would have their own haunted houses, not hell houses.
Oh, a haunted house, though.
Yeah, just very, like, kid-oriented minor spooks and goblins. Mm-hmm. We'll get into hell houses later, but, even though I did go to a Baptist church, it wasn't anything like that.
Surprising.
Yeah. I mean, that was before the concept of the hell house.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like, we'd have like a Halloween carnival, you know?
Gotcha.
You bob for apples and, do that little, fishing game where you get something clipped to your fishing pole behind a curtain.
Oh, yeah. Remember that? Those are awesome. It's so funny. Then, do you remember when you were a kid just being like, God, this Halloween carnival is really well done.
Yeah.
And then if you go to one as an adult, you're like, this is really junky. Like, are these kids really falling for all this stuff? And yeah,
they are.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, my elementary school had a pretty rockin' Halloween carnival every year, too.
The Catholic school I went to had a good one.
It was one of the highlights of my year.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. And now the concept of bobbing for apples, there's no way I would put my face in that disgusting water.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, out of the JCs, in 1975, there were a couple of guys from a chapter in Bloomington, Illinois, named Jim Gould and Tom Hillegas. And they says, you know what, let's just create our own haunted house book, basically, like a, yeah, I don't know if it was a book. Yeah, I guess it was a book. And let's teach people how to open these up and sell it. And they distributed about 20,000 copies. And it was, they formed the Haunted House Company. And it was the first real group of outfit to kind of just sell the plan and
right.
the stuff that you needed, the props.
Right, like details, like how to do special effects.
Like a starter kit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And because of the success of the JCs in the 70s and 80s, private companies finally were like, oh, we can make some cash off of this starting in the 90s. And so the haunted houses that we think of today, the for-profit ones, like Netherworld in Atlanta, or 13th Story in New Orleans is another big one. That they came out of the 90s.
Do you go to those?
No.
No interest?
No.
Yeah.
Do you?
No. Emily and I, we still may go. She has a hankering this year to go to Netherworld just because we haven't been to. I think we went to one in L.A. that was pretty decent.
Uh-huh.
I'll go, I guess, if she wants to, but it's not my favorite thing. I mean, I like scary movies and stuff. I don't avoid that stuff.
I am depressed, Chuck. On Twitter the other day, I said the best scary movie the best horror movie I haven't seen. Go. And I have heard of
Vampire in Brooklyn, Eddie Murphy.
Every single suggestion, and there were a bunch of suggestions that everybody shot back. So I realized I'm really running low on good horror movies.
They aren't around much anymore. Like the ones that are, to me, the ones that are genuinely scary are the ones that get into your head.
Yeah.
And I'll take a fair amount of jump scares
mm-hmm.
because that's a part of it if it's got the tension ratcheted up.
Right.
But, the ones these days, man, just the disgusting, torture porn thing, I'm just not into that.
No, I'm not either. It's just such an easy, cheap,
yeah, they don't
whatever.
Scare me.
Exactly.
They just repulse me.
Exactly. Which is a totally different sensation. You know, that's fine if you like to be repulsed in it, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's great for that. But that's not true fear.
No.
It's not being scared necessarily. It's different.
Yeah.
I do have a recommendation for you, though.
A movie?
Uh-huh. It's called either The Lady in Black or Woman in Black. And it stars a grown-up Harry Potter. So it's fairly new. I think it came out in the last couple of years.
The Daniel Radcliffe guy?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And he does a great job. It's almost exclusively just him in the movie.
Oh, wow. Is he the lady in black?
He does double duty.
Oh, nice.
And there are some like Conjuring-esque style, like CGI ghost graphics,
yeah.
But it's not overdone. It's not overblown. And it is a genuinely frightening ghost story.
Conjuring was okay.
It was okay. This
not
one,
great.
I would say this one might be better.
And that guy, is it, I don't know if it's Ty or T. West. T. I. is his name. He's a director that did, The Innkeepers and,
Oh yeah, that was a good one too.
Yeah, and then, I can't remember did he do House of the Devil? Those are pretty good because he's a little more old school. He's not just trying to out-gore you or
right.
shock you. It's, he tries to build genuine suspense and dread.
The same guy did both of those movies?
Not The Conjuring.
No, the Innkeepers and House of the Devil.
I think so.
Because both of those were good movies.
Yeah.
They seemed totally different, though.
Yeah, I may be wrong on that.
The Innkeepers, that was a slow burn that managed to pay off, but it took a long time to build up.
Yeah, it was a little slow.
Like, it didn't even try to start the scares
yeah.
until, like, 30 minutes in.
Yeah, you know the lady that's in that is Kelly McGillis. Did you realize that?
Yeah.
I didn't know till the end of the movie it said Kelly McGillis. It's like, oh, she's got the same name as that lady from Top Gun.
Yeah, I think.
But then it's really her.
Right.
She looks so different now.
Yes. So that's our Josh and Chuck's Horror Movie Corner. We'll get back to the actual podcast right after this message.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, we should have done a, maybe next year we'll just do one of those.
Okay.
Like a total horror movie, talk fest.
Sounds good.
Those are fun. But back to the, more boring subject of haunted house attractions.
Right.
The industry is huge. Like you said, there's a lot of money to be made and, no two haunted houses are going to be alike. Sometimes these folks that open them buy an old home or something and mm-hmm. own it and do this every year. Sometimes they rent out a space. The ones I've been to haven't been in, the actual space wasn't some like cool old house or like a penitentiary or.
Yeah, apparently Eastern State Penitentiary is converted
yeah.
each year. And that is a scary, scary place just normally.
Looking at it.
Yeah.
The only ones I've been to are the ones that it's like, it's in a big open, like a shopping center where there used to be a.
Oh.
Like a Zales jewelry closed down.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The ghost of capitalism.
and then you have themes. Some of them, I think the better haunted houses have themes because when you talk about scares, you can be all over the map, from doing something like with a movie theme where you have classic horror movies or serial killers or crazed scientists.
Yeah.
Or like vampires and monsters and ghouls and goblins.
Yes.
Those are two very different kind of themes.
Apparently, Rob Zombie's got his own jam going in Chicago.
It's called his house.
Yeah, pretty much. It's called Rob Zombie's Great American Nightmare.
Yeah.
Which I think is supposed to be a play on the American Dream. But one of the rooms is the John Wayne Gacy room, and it's like a guy dressed up like John Wayne Gacy's Bubbles the Clown. I think that was the name of his clown, wasn't it?
That sounds right.
Just kind of hanging out in like a recliner or whatever. And this is Chicago, and that's where John Wayne Gacy killed his victims.
Yeah.
And a lot of the victims' families are still around, so everybody's up in arms, and Rob Zombie's like, could not care less. Thank you for the free press.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, clowns are, I posted something on our Facebook page the other day because that new clown in, American Horror Story. Uh-huh. Have you seen this clown yet?
No.
Twisty the Clown?
Uh-uh.
The guy that made that show is like, just wait. I know clowns can be scary, but I have got the scariest clown ever.
Awesome.
And it's pretty scary, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm not bothered by it, by things like that much, but I saw this clown and I'm not into that show, but I did watch the scenes that that clown was in just to see what it was like.
Yeah.
And it's pretty frightening.
I'll have to check them out.
Yeah. And there's a broad daylight killing, which are always super scary to me.
Oh, yeah. Like they don't care about.
Yeah.
There's no hiding it or anything.
Yeah.
That's out in the open.
Like a beautiful blue sky out in a beautiful field.
Oh, yeah.
And those kind of creep me out more.
Yeah. Because the whole idea of like, oh, it's a good day to die.
Yeah.
To me, that doesn't mean it's beautiful out. It means like it's like the world's already ending. Now it's a good day to die.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The earth is opening up and magma is pouring out. That is possibly a good day to die.
Then the serial killer can come along.
Right.
Yeah. So if you're opening one of these haunted houses, you can count on spending, because this is a good idea. You can make some good dough if you've got the funds to get it going.
Sure.
$15 to $25 per square foot for decorating and special effects is what.
Just that alone.
Yeah, is what you're going to, and that's not counting the renting or buying of the structure itself.
Right. So you have 5,000 foot scare footage.
Okay.
That's what I was going for.
That's good.
You can be spending up to $125,000 just in decorations and scares and tricks.
Yeah. And you may be able to reuse a lot of that from year to year, but you probably shouldn't put out the same thing every year because if you're in the same space doing the same thing, you're not going to get repeat customers.
No.
So you want to turn over like 30 to 40% of that each year, to new stuff.
Right. And like you said, themes often change. So just changing the theme alone is going to require that you change this your layout, I guess, to an extent.
Yeah.
Like if you're doing scary clowns.
Sure.
You're probably going to have to get rid of your OR setting or whatever.
Right.
Unless you do a clown doing surgery, which is kind of scary, but it just seems a little off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clown doing surgery. That's just dumb.
That'd be pretty scary. The clown hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, don't they have that?
Children's Hospital has a clown character.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Rob Corddry.
Yeah.
Sure. And by the way, this is written by Kristen Conger from Stuff Mom Never Told You, and she actually interviewed a few owners of haunted houses to get some good inside poop. And that's where we're like getting these numbers. And they say to open one up.
I was just making mine up.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
They said to open one up, you not only obviously it's a fun job, but you've got to have a lot of business acumen too. It's not just like, oh, this will be a hoot.
Right.
Like you've got to be super focused and have a good business brain or you're not going to make any money.
Plus also, safety is a big, big deal.
Oh, it's huge.
Especially after a fateful event in 1984 at Six Flags Great Adventure in New Jersey.
Yeah.
They had a 17 trailer interconnected modular haunted house, dark ride, basically, but a walking dark ride. So it was a haunted house. And it was basically a fire trap and it went up and 8 teenagers got trapped inside and died in the fire.
Yeah.
There were no fire sprinklers. There were no obvious, emergency exit signs or anything like that. And, as a result, 1984.
That's what happened back then.
Yeah. But you'd think like by the time the 80s rolled around, people would have figured out, oh, if somebody lights a match in here or doesn't put their cigarette out.
Yeah.
Cause again, it's the 80s. So people still smoked everywhere.
Yeah.
The whole thing's going to go up because it's all plywood and foam. And maybe we should put fire sprinklers in. But yeah, apparently it took this tragedy to really, change the industry, but it did.
Yeah. And safety is, like you said, a huge, huge part of it because you're in the dark. You've got things flying out and props swooping down and people jumping out. And, I mean, anything can happen to go wrong and someone can get injured. So.
Yeah. And actually, did you hear about the girl in 2011?
No.
There was an employee at one of the ones outside of St. Louis called Creepy World.
Uh-huh.
And, she worked there and somehow got caught in a noose and accidentally hung herself.
That sounds like a story that you hear.
You would think so.
Yeah.
It is so well documented that it actually did happen. I'm quite sure.
Crazy.
But she survived.
Oh.
She suffered some brain damage to an extent from what I understand.
Oh.
I don't know if it was extensive or not.
I'm on a roller coaster of emotion
here. Right. But she did survive, but she accidentally got caught in the noose and hung herself. And it's possible some patrons passed her by thinking that she was what was supposed to be going on.
Yeah. I've heard some story that is not that of someone who hung themselves on Halloween and everyone thought it was just a decoration in the front yard.
My friend, you need to go watch the most recent Don't Be Dumb.
Oh, really?
It comes out this week.
Is it about that?
Yes.
Is that an old one? Well, don't spoil it.
Okay.
People should go watch it.
Go watch Don't Be Dumb about that. Man, that's a good one.
And tell him Josh sent you. So after you've got your safety system worked out, you've got your fire safety, you've got your sprinkler system, you've got flame retardant material, you've got cameras set up everywhere. Everyone has signed a lengthy waiver.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they do get hurt, they could probably still try and sue you, but you're trying to avoid that at all costs. What you're going to have is some sort of a maze-like structure.
Yeah.
Where you're walking around, sort of lost, but really just getting shuffled along a path.
Right. And there's, like you said earlier, there's this thing called throughput. So there's a lot of thought put into it because apparently the worst thing you can do in a haunted house, and this makes sense, is to let the group behind catch up to the group ahead.
Yeah, that ruins the whole thing.
Ruins everything.
Because you're in a group, it depends, but I don't know, 6 or 8 people.
And you don't want the scare that already happened to be apparent to the group that hasn't gotten there yet.
Like you see the chainsaw guy crawling back into his little tree
stump. Exactly, right, yeah. Exactly. So this throughput is basically a calculation of how many people you can push through at what intervals to, say, meet your nightly ticket quota. So the numbers that Conger gives is to get 500 people through in a night, you can put a group of 6. You can set them out every 25 to 30 seconds, and they shouldn't bump into one another.
Yeah.
And then one of the ways that employees make sure that these groups don't bump into one another is the way that they scare people.
Yeah, it's called scaring forward.
Which makes sense.
It does. It's kind of an interesting, boring term. But what they're doing is usually jumping behind you as you walk through the group to make you go in a forward. They don't want to jump out in front of you and have you move in the direction you just came from.
Right, backward.
Yeah, so they want to scare you forward. And that is a little tip if you are not into being the lead person being scared. Then you should be in the lead because it's probably going to come from behind you.
It's pretty counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But
you think, I'm going to be in the back and I'll be just fine.
Yeah.
You're the one that's going to get grabbed.
Because if they jump out at the front of the group again, it's going to push the group backward and the group ahead is going to run into the group behind and that's very bad.
Yeah. And I say get grabbed. You probably won't get touched.
No, there apparently are some haunted house attractions that do light touching. But you're going to be fully informed.
That just sounds so creepy.
It really does.
Light touching.
You're going to be fully informed. Like you're not going to not know that it's coming. Like in line, they're going to be like, sign this, an initial here, an initial here, an initial here. And, we're going to give you a, heart attack test first.
Yeah.
Just to make sure. Please step on this treadmill. That kind of thing.
See, that's how I would really scare people is say, you know, none of the actors are allowed to touch anyone. So if you're getting touched, that means something has gone horribly wrong.
Right.
And then have people grabbing
you. You get so sued.
Well, we'll get to in a minute, the new extreme ones where there's not only touching, like it's beyond anything that you could imagine.
Right.
but we'll get to that soon. And since we mentioned actors hiding, those are called scare pockets.
Yeah, where they hide and yeah. they jump out from.
Yeah, so like they're hiding behind that tree and they may distract you with a bat swooping down in the other direction. There's a lot of distraction going on because what they don't want is you to be focused on the clearly placed faux tree trunk that has the smell of a chainsaw engine.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But there won't be any blade on that chainsaw, by the way.
No, and a good actor also will scramble back into place very quickly.
Yeah.
Because the longer they hang out and are like, huh?
Right.
The more you're going to be like, you're just some teenager.
Yeah.
Who doesn't scare me.
Yeah, and if you're looking to save a little money, you might want to double up and have that scare pocket have a couple of different ways that it can go. Like, I can jump out on these people on the right who are in this one part of the haunted house. Then I can scramble back and then hit these people on the left, not hit them, jump out and scare them. And that way you're saving a little dough with your actors.
Yeah, doubling or tripling your people.
That's right.
And then apparently, Chuck, lastly, a lot of the attractions are run on compressed air that is set off either through motion sensors, which I think everybody expects.
Yeah.
But also through touch pads.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Because you can control that, right?
Well, with a motion sensor, every group's going to set off that effect.
At the same point.
Right. And what it does is it opens the valve and all of a sudden the skeleton sits up in the coffin or comes out from the side or
then
something
you hear,
like that.
Psh, psh.
Right, exactly.
You hear some weird air.
Exactly right. That was a really good impression.
Right.
With a touchpad, though, if you, say, place the square off to the left or something, not every group is going to walk over the touchpad.
Yeah.
So not every group is going to get the same set of scares, so it kind of randomizes the thing, which in turn makes the whole experience even more frightening. Because if you hear the group ahead
sure.
at the curve scream,
and you hear
when
that
you
air
get
cannon.
To that scream,
yeah.
exactly, when you get to that curve, you're going to be prepared. And if nothing happens, well, then, my friend, you're just even more keyed up for the next one.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you're keyed up to begin with walking in there because a good haunted house will put a little bit of money into getting you all ramped up in the parking lot, in the line. They might have creeps dressed up roaming
yeah.
around. They may have sound effects and spooky music and like an air horn blast,
yeah.
which is really uncool. Yeah. And that's just got you on edge. By the time you walk in that place, you're ready
yeah.
to be scared.
All right, Chuck.
Yeah.
We've teased it enough. Let's talk about extreme haunted houses, which apparently are so extreme that people who are haunted house enthusiasts, like the people who are like in the industry,
yeah.
don't even like these things to be called extreme haunted houses because they're so extreme.
Yeah.
That's what I gather.
Yeah. And these are, to say these are interactive is not really putting a fine point on it. They are, you're basically paying money to be treated like an assault victim.
Yeah.
For up to 7 hours.
Like you might be put in a headlock.
Yeah.
You might, where's the one? There's one in San Diego.
Yeah. McCamey Manor.
Okay.
Is renowned as like the worst of the worst.
The video that I saw, it was like you are like covered in blood.
Dude, it was unbelievable.
Put into like a coffin and somebody is like in there writhing on top of you.
Yeah.
In the dark.
And you're trying to get out and they're pulling you back in.
Right.
And just like, it's insane how intense this thing looks.
Yeah. They had a cage that locks your head in.
Yeah.
That they're dropping like fake snakes in.
Yeah.
Which is not as bad as live snakes, but it's still pretty bad. And apparently the catchphrase of everybody who goes through these things is, let me out of here.
Yeah.
Except they shout or cry it.
Well, yeah, but apparently, supposedly, McCamey Manor, it's open year-round.
Oh, yeah?
And they only take 4 people a day
yeah.
through this thing.
But like you said, it's up to 7 hours long in some cases, right?
Yeah, so they'll take in, I think, just one at a time. You have to go through by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And they only do 4 people a day. It's only open on the weekends. And I don't know if this is true. Supposedly, the one rule, like you have to apply, fill out an application to go through this thing.
Right.
And be super fit
yeah.
and super psychologically fit. And because you're getting physically like abused in some cases, like nothing you can't walk away from, but you know, they're mangling you without hurting you.
Well, yeah, and I saw they held one guy's face in front of a toilet and it shot up some
yeah.
noxious stuff out of it. Like stuff like that. So on one hand, it is like physically abusive. On the other, it's like almost laughable that they, like, these people really put their minds to it.
Yeah.
And they came up with shooting stuff out of a toilet in your face.
Yeah. But supposedly you can't leave this one at all. Like, there is no safe word.
I just don't believe that.
I don't believe it either, but it's free. The one in San Diego is
really?
Yeah, it's free. And that's the one hook is that you're not allowed to leave. What you sign a document that says, I'm going to go through this thing from beginning to end.
Whatevs.
That's what I say. Yeah. Trust me, I would get out of that place.
Sure.
Like, I would bust through a wall or something. Yeah. If that's what it took.
Chuck Murray.
But that is McCamey Manor. And that is, was constructed by Russ McCamey, who's a terror fanatic. They also have one in New York and L.A. called Blackout, one called Gates of Hell in Las Vegas. And the common denominator of all these is you're getting physically, like, you don't wear clothes you ever want to wear again because you're going to have fake blood and vomit thrown in your face.
Hopefully fake.
And be physically assaulted. I mean, they have scenes where you're like, where there's a rapist after you.
Right.
It's really dark and disturbing.
With haunted house enthusiasts who criticize these kind of things, it's usually because they say there's no story to it. There's very rarely build up. It's all just payoff. Like, all of it is just, there's no ratcheting up of tension.
It's like
just,
those movies.
Yeah.
That we're talking about.
Very much so.
It's the haunted attraction version of, I don't even know what they are. I don't watch any of them.
Like Hostel.
Oh, okay. I did see that one actually.
What'd you think?
Yeah, not. Anytime, if you're going to pull out that rusty tray of medical instruments, you've lost me.
Yeah.
That is such a trope by now, you know?
You know who did do it well was the first couple Hellraisers. They used medical instruments to
really... Yeah, but that was back in the day.
Disheartening degree effect.
Yeah, the ones that scare me the most, again, to delve back into movies, like, did you ever see Wolf Creek?
No.
It's set in the Australian outback.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's the kids whose car breaks down, and all of a sudden the rest of the movie is them getting chased by this homicidal maniac.
Okay, that to me is what's called a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
That's not, I mean, yes, I understand it is horror. Friday the 13th, that's like Hallmark horror, but it's
slasher movie?
Different. Yeah, the slasher movie is just, it's just different to me. And there's not enough true, genuine horror movies, in my opinion, which amount to basically supernatural horror, I guess is how you'd put it. That's what I'm into.
You should check out Wolf Creek. It's the
I have no problem with it. It's just, as far as horror goes, I'm not scared by that.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums, but I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to be scared.
You might be scared.
Okay. I'll check it out.
The murderous guy is a really like kind of a great character. And I think he falls into the pantheon of classic, like Michael Myers characters.
Oh yeah.
Like, yeah, one of the good slashers.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the Hell Houses.
Yeah.
Which, like we said, was sort of started back in the dark ages of Christianity. They do this today. The most famous one is in, Cedar Hill, Texas. And there's a documentary called Hell House on these things, I think from like 2002.
Prayer Camp?
No, Hell House.
I gotcha.
And, the idea of these is, run by, churches usually, and they are to, just like in the old days, scare you into walking the straight and narrow.
Right. And actually they were originated by Jerry Falwell back in the 70s.
Yeah, those are the first ones, I think.
Yeah, and then in the 90s, that church in Texas you mentioned took over, Abundant Life Christian Center. And they took over and they started actually packaging it. They started selling Hell Houses for like $299.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, do you remember those JCs in the 70s that came up with the haunted house package?
Yeah.
These are the same things, but for hell houses. And then there's modules that you can buy that cost additional amounts of money so you can add rooms to it. And so like a room you might buy is the abortion room.
Right.
And in the abortion room, you're taught how to use, raw meat that's like a stand-in for a fetus that you throw into a glass bowl. You gotta make sure it's a glass bowl so everybody can see through into it.
Dude, the quote literally from the manual that they distribute on how to run these says, quote, purchase a meat product that closely resembles pieces of a baby to be placed in a glass bowl.
Right.
So that's their suggestion.
That's a room from Hell House.
Yeah, and this is to keep you from having premarital sex.
Exactly.
Obviously.
Subtlety is not a hallmark of the Hell House.
No.
So for example, like if you, there's one from New Destiny Christian Center. It's called the Rave Scene. And basically it's about, club drugs and death, teenage death. Like pretty much everybody dies or takes their own life as a result of...
Of sin.
Yes, of their sin.
Yeah, like the lesbian suicide room.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a young lady succumbs to lesbianism and is so mistreated and...
She goes to... She's not a lesbian. She's just saving herself. And is mistaken for a lesbian, confusingly.
Okay.
And then, then kills herself because her best friend rejects her and calls her a lesbian when she went to go hug her. That was from the Vice article you sent, at least.
Yeah, that's a great article. But like you
UK
said,
Vice.
It's all repercussions of sins. So there's the lesbian suicide room. There's the, AIDS room.
Right.
The abortion room. The, domestic violence room, the DUI room, and they're all just enacting these horrific scenes until you get finally to hell is at the end, not the very end.
Right.
And hell is where they're, you know, displaying what hell looks like with ghouls and demons. And then finally you get to go to heaven.
Well, this is what makes a hell house a hell house.
You descend
through these different types of sin into hell. And then when you come out, you emerge through hell, and then the real life preacher is there, saying, "Hey, how about you repent? And for those of you who aren't saved, why don't you come on over to our church and we'll save you?"
Yeah, they call it in the Vice article. They call it the it's a really cool pastor who jumps out and is the good cop to Hell House's bad cop, and he's like, "You can avoid all this scary stuff if you you know, take the Lord Jesus as your Savior." Right. And sometimes they'll do that right in the room. And have you signed something?
Oh, I can imagine.
And that's the Hell House.
And in that Vice article, it's crazy. The author mentions that a little boy goes off and vomits during the Hell House.
Yeah.
So apparently they're very effective.
Well, if the object is to make you sick and vomit.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Vomit from fear for your soul.
And they're still around. It seems like something that might have gone by the wayside.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, you can still go to Hell Houses in a lot of places.
I have one more thing for you, Chuck.
What you got?
Go to BuzzFeed.com. You may have heard of that website.
Sure.
And search for 44 best picks of scared bros at haunted
houses. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I can't remember where the haunted house is, but it's all the same background, but very much like roller coasters.
Yeah.
They take a photo of this one spot.
Right.
And it's like the scariest spot. And, the people are...
It's great.
They're wonderful, hilarious photos. Yeah. And, like, it's been around. I think they first started publishing them in 2011. So they've been around for years, and they're still just as funny as ever.
It's great. The scared face is just so pure to me because it's just pure reaction.
Yeah.
Like the toughest dude in the world.
Like trying to climb over his girlfriend or push her toward whatever he's afraid of or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's whatever is happening in that 2 seconds.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. So, that's Haunted House Attractions, everybody.
Ooh.
I know. If you want to know more about them, type those words in the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And since I said that, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Karate Kid email.
Awesome.
Which was the scariest movie I've ever seen. If you listen to our karate episode, we wax philosophical about the Karate Kid movie, and we got a lot of emails of people feeling great waves of nostalgia in talking about it. So here we go. I imagine you guys will get dozens of versions of this similar email. I just listened to Karate, and I have not finished it yet, but I'm writing about the first 7 to 8 minutes specifically. Your ode to the Karate Kid was beautiful. I got goosebumps along with Chuck. I may have also had a tear in my eye when he described that magical moment in the film where it all comes together and we realize, along with Daniel-san, that Mr. Miyagi is truly a genius. By the way, Ralph Macchio named his son Daniel.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
After himself.
Yeah, I guess so. After the best version of himself. I recently sent the Karate Kid to my 6-year-old nephew to ensure that despite what his friends and media try to tell him, he will know that Ralph Macchio is the original and only Karate Kid.
Yeah.
When I called him and asked what his favorite part was, he actually started singing, "You're the best around.
Nice.
Nothing's ever gonna get you down." It was the proudest moment of my aunthood so far. Now, Chuck, I implore you to watch The Karate Kid 2. After all the other films that attempt to be a part of the franchise are a travesty, 2 is incredibly good.
It is very good.
The Peter Cetera song Josh mentioned, Glory of Love, was my first ever favorite song when I was 6.
It's a good song.
Because of the film. It's a classic, and I think you are missing out. I'll watch it. I'll check it out. Anyways, thanks for sending me to work this morning with an extra bounce in my step and a song in my heart. That is from Nicole Beal at Jed's Barbershop, Salt Lake City, Utah. Go get her to cut your head.
Nice.
Hair.
Not your head. She's doing a terrible job if she's cutting your head. Thanks a lot, Nicole. Did you know our friend Van Nostrand, does his band The Bangalores do a cover of You're the Best Around?
I knew he loved that song. I don't know if I knew they actually covered it.
It's good. You can go to SoundCloud, search Bangalores, and You're the Best Around. It's on there.
Oh, I'm going to do that right after this.
Too. If you want to let us know that we nailed something, we want to hear about it, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, It gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're going to love season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.